episode number 6 of Unapologetically Overcoming. I'm your host, Jess Marie. I'm going to give this episode a trigger warning as it does have to do with addiction and recovery, and I know that that is a sensitive topic to many people. I am so grateful to my guest today for taking the time to speak with me and share her journey with all of you. All right, so today I have with me as my guest, my beautiful friend, Chelsea, and I am going to let her introduce herself and tell us a little bit about who she is, what she does, and all the good stuff.
So, hello, my name is Chelsea Spohr. I have been working at home as a stay-at-home mom and doing online stuff to be able to stay home with the kids for the past 7 or 8 years, and I love it so very much. And I have been sober and conquering all of that for the past 15 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so definitely helping women learn that they can come from that and still achieve their goals and be good parents, and all the things that you would think weren't possible are very possible.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. So being that you brought that up, we will dive right into the questions. When did you start using?
So I actually started dabbling when I was about 12, 13 years old. I had an event happen when I was 13 where I was assaulted at a young age, and going through that dark time kind of brought me into wanting to escape life and all the feelings that come with, you know, kind of trauma, childhood trauma, and, you know, not having the easiest of lives. And then started with small stuff and then started to work my way up to, you know, more of the harder drugs. And I, became a full-blown heroin addict when I was about 16 years old. And then I got sober when I was about 19, turning 20 years old. So kind of went full swing all through teenage years of partying and, you know, hard drugs and drinking and just trying to escape life in general.
Mm-hmm. Which is sometimes how it happens.
Yes.
Cycle of everything. Mm-hmm. At what point in all of that did you actually realize that you were addicted and that something was going on that you kind of needed to address?
Yeah. I think I, in general, like even since when I started using, I knew that I was using it as an escape. So I knew that that in itself was a major issue, because it's like, okay, you're already aware that you're not doing this for fun. Which is what you think, you know, when you're, you know, a teenager, everybody maybe, well, most people, you know, experiment and do things because they're being introduced to stuff when they're, you know, in middle school, high school, so on. But for me, it was completely different. It was, you're using because you don't want to think about things. You don't want to deal with your trauma. You don't know how to cope with life as a whole. And where you're at. And so I think from the get-go, I knew that I was doing it for that reason. And as I continued to search for, you know, more and more, you know, not just smoking weed or, you know, little things that, you know, the average person would dabble into, that I was developing a serious problem. And as I started using harder and harder drugs, it was like, as soon as I woke up, I had to figure out a way. Mm-hmm. I had to have it. I needed it. I couldn't even function as a human being without it. And I would do whatever it takes to get my fix for that day, because I just didn't want to even think the things in which I was thinking in my head. Mm-hmm. And it was the only thing that I knew was going to make me forget, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so it got pretty bad where it was just all day and all night, just nonstop, trying different things, being in with the crowds of people. And then of course comes trouble and, you know, things that you shouldn't be doing. And, but you just didn't care, mm-hmm. you know, and losing everybody that I was close to, burning all the bridges that come with that. That's when I really realized, like, okay, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm losing everybody in my life and sabotaging everything that I know, burning all the bridges because I just didn't care.
Yeah.
Anymore, you know?
I think that's huge, though, that you were able to recognize so early on and at such a young age, like, why you were going to that as the escape. Because, I mean, you know, it takes so many people years and years and years and years to recognize that. And sometimes they never get to that point. So yeah. I think that's, you know,
I think in general, it takes people years and, you know, even taking drugs out of it, it takes people years to become self-aware of their
internal
struggles, their mental struggles. And some people don't even get to that place. They don't know how to grow, heal, and evolve as a human being. It definitely, I feel like it, the fact that I was able to recognize it even when doing it.
Right.
Saying that that was like a kudos to me or anything, but I think that it definitely helped me later on being as self-aware as I was, as I started to get sober. Mm-hmm. It really helped me learn to process things. I need therapy. I need this because the only way I'm ever going to get clean is if I know how to cope without that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that means learning the tools, learning how to heal and evolve and grow as a person and handle the demons, I guess, as you would put it. Myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about like the treatment course therapy, you know, what type of treatment you received as far as the addiction goes.
Yes. So I'm many interventions happen. and unfortunately, you know, one thing I will say from talking to other addicts and stuff like that is you can want it for us as much as you want, but until we want it for ourselves, it is going to happen. I did rehab stints and that didn't quite cut it for me because I wasn't ready. Yeah. And then I did meetings and all that stuff and got a sponsor. But it wasn't until I almost lost my life when I was 19 years old. I was in a really tragic car accident where I almost died. And it was kind of like the wake up call of, okay, I'm going to die. And this is the person that they're going to remember me as. Mm-hmm. not the original version of myself or the kind-hearted person that I was. None of that. It was completely washed by all the horrible things that I was doing while being an addict. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like the, oh crap, like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to be on this path anymore. And when that kind of clicked, was when I started taking it very seriously. I actually had gotten in trouble previously before I got in the car accident. So I ended up having to go to jail for a little period of time. And that was kind of what cold turkey mm-hmm. got me to kind of kick the habit.
Yeah.
It was awful, awful. Because it's not like you're in the comfort of your home or anything like that. It's actually quite miserable, even worse than you would think.
Yeah.
Getting sick and, you know, it's like the flu times 1,000, all the things. And then when I got out, I went to rehab and I started going to meetings. My family went to Al-Anon meetings too, to learn how to, you know, handle the emotions and triggers and all the things. And one of the things that I majorly had to do in order to maintain my sobriety is completely cut out every single person from my life that I was partying with and doing all of those things. It's like, you can pretend and say, well, they're my friends and, you know, I'm just, but no, because it somehow comes in and you're just not strong enough. When you're newly sober, you're not strong enough to just be like, nope. And I can't speak for everybody, but I know for a fact that I was not.
Right.
There was no way I could be around them and be like, no, I don't want that. Because I do. I want that.
Yeah. I think that's probably true for a lot of people that are in that situation. Yeah, definitely.
And so therapy, lots of therapy, lots of therapy. And, you know, started doing yoga at a young age and meditating. And I was also going to church on Sundays and going to meetings. I had a sponsor that I could talk to. I had a sponsor for the first 5 or 6 years of being sober. And then eventually I kind of started, you know, weaning away from that, knowing that I was strong enough in my sobriety where I could cope myself and I didn't need to make those late night calls of I'm about to slip or
yeah.
I need you or, you know, whatever. And I had kids too. So mm-hmm. at that point,
yeah.
So, I still went to some meetings and for the most part, it was mostly therapy after that point of, you know, seeing somebody that was helping me through my trauma and all my pain points. Mm-hmm. To kind of learn to sit with the darkness of yourself mm-hmm. and come out of that.
Yeah.
Really helped me.
Wonderful. And then, so you said you've been in recovery for 15 years, right?
Yeah, it'll be 16 years in March of 2023.
So awesome. And so if you could tell the people listening one thing that you would want them to know about either addiction, recovery, both of them, what would it be? Because you're aware, I'm aware, there's so many stigmas related to oh, yeah. addiction and recovery and that sort of thing. So what's the one thing, if you had to pick, that you could tell people about it, that they commonly think that, you know, might not actually be true?
I think in regards to people, there's two perspectives, I would say, is people that are not the addict, the people that are dealing with the addict is they're just like you. They're your best friend. They're your sister. They're your mom. They're, you know, they're all these people that are normal in a sense. Like they're just like you. They just are dealing with stuff that they don't know how to handle and cope. And it's about not as they get sober, not continuing to judge them and shame them and actually being there for them and learning who they are as the original person that they were. Mm-hmm. And because I think the hardest thing in sobriety, at least in my eyes, is when I was feeling like as I was getting clean is, you know, she's always going to be this like junkie girl and she's never going to amount to anything. And she'll never be a good mom. She'll never be successful as a person. And it really debilitates you because you already have those thoughts that are processing right. in your head. When you are using, you think the worst possible things about yourself.
Right.
You know, you're on this constant mental battle and pain points of yourself, if you really think about it.
Yeah.
And so what we need is people that are supportive and loving and patient. And I know it's hard. Mm-hmm. I completely know that it's hard.
Yeah.
But it's, we're hard enough on ourselves.
Right.
The last thing that we really need is other people being hard on us too.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think as being the addict in the situation, as you're getting clean is to remember to give yourself grace in all situations as much as you possibly can. Like, even if you do slip up, because I, one thing I've learned is I have, through being sober so long, is I talk to other addicts and people that are, you know, in recovery, and whether it's with alcohol addiction or drug addiction, sex addiction, all those things, it's, there's sometimes slip ups.
Yeah.
And, but that doesn't mean you stop trying. Absolutely. And that doesn't mean that you hate yourself for it, mm-hmm. Because you can always continue. You can always get a new chip. And I know that's hard to say, because when you work so hard for it and you're like making all this progress and you're celebrating your birthdays, as we call it sometimes, is if there's mistakes made, you still have to love yourself through that. And you can always get better. There's always a fresh start tomorrow if need be.
Definitely.
And even almost 16 years later, there are still days where when I have really rough days and it's far in between, I'm pretty much happy go lucky majority of the time, mm-hmm. but I still have my rough days.
Everybody does. We all do.
We all have bad moments.
It's human.
Yeah, it's human nature. Still, after all this time, on my really, really bad days, sometimes I still think, you know, I could just, and it would be so easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But really, it's not worth everything that I would lose from it. Because now I have three kids and, you know, I've made so much progress.
Yeah.
And, but it's okay. It's normal to have those thoughts and to think those things. It's not going to go away. It's just every day pushing past those demons and choosing, making the conscious choice to not do that and to do better. And know that tomorrow's going to come around and you can always restart and do better than you were the day before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've said so many important things throughout the course of this, but two things that stick out to me, one of which has to really do with people don't really realize it when they're not exposed to it, but having myself been around people who are struggling with addiction, really understanding that you cannot make them get help if they don't want to help. They are not going to change for you, for their kids, for their parents, for nobody. They will not do it until they are ready. And I think that's extremely important for people to understand. Yeah. But something else too, I had seen a meme once about like slipping up. It was about like slipping up and recovery and that. Right. Yeah. Essentially it was like, if you get a flat tire on your car, you don't make all the other tires flat. Fix that one flat tire. And that really resonated with me.
You keep chuckle-lucking along.
Right. You fix what needs to be fixed and you keep moving. You don't like wreck everything else because one thing, you know, got messed
and
up.
And all that stuff is a band-aid, you know, like you have to fix what's truly broken. And that's what I learned is you have to fix what is truly broken inside of yourself. And that means through work and time and therapy. And if therapy is not for you, there's other outlets to things. There's, you know, there's groups, there's, you know, retreats, there's, you know, I do yoga, meditation, all those things. It helps me center myself and become Zen. And, you know, there's going to church. There's different things that you can do to fix those demons, those trauma issues inside of yourself, that the drugs are just a cover up. It's like skirting stuff under the dirt, under the rug. You know, eventually the rug's going to pillow up and the dirt's going to come out, right?
Absolutely.
And that's like using, it's just putting this band-aid on stuff, and it's never going to go away. It's never going to heal and mend until you put in the conscious effort to do the work on yourself. Yeah. And that's the only way you stay sober.
Yeah. And it is trial and error sometimes too, because what works for you might not necessarily work for someone else. And that's okay. You just have to try to find what works for you and go with it.
And also not judging. I had one guy say to me one time, because now that it's been so many years, like I, you know, will drink occasionally. So I never had a drinking problem or whatnot. And he tried to take away my sobriety from me. He's like, well, you're not really sober. And sobriety looks different for everybody. Now, when I first got sober, I was cold turkey. I didn't do anything at all until I had been sober long enough. But it looks different. Some people are completely cold turkey. Some people eventually drink or, you know, and if that's your version of sobriety, then that's okay. And there shouldn't be shame in that.
Absolutely.
You know, it looks different for everybody. Just the way I heal may be different than the way somebody else heals. And, but you just got to keep doing the best that you can for you, not for anybody else.
Yeah. I think that's the most important thing for people to hear is it's not the same for everybody. And if it's something that is working for you, then focus on that and do that.
And give yourself kudos for that. Don't let anybody take that.
For sure. All right. So before we go, do you have a quote or some sort of message that you would like to share with the listeners? Something that motivates you, inspires you, anything like that?
I do. I have my favorite quote, but I have to read it because I didn't want to mess up.
Okay. It's okay. Go ahead.
So it's any fool, and I have this as my screensaver on my phone.
Okay.
Any fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. And that's by Albert Einstein. And the reason I put that in regards to my sobriety is it takes courage every day to choose a different path for yourself.
I love that.
And to not be on the path where you're using and you're kind of destroying your life and the lives of everyone around you.
Yeah.
And so you should be proud of that when you take that step every single day on that new path for yourself. And that's the most important thing.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Addiction and recovery are both highly personal journeys. So I want to remind anyone that this may apply to that it's okay if your journey looks different than others. I also want to remind everyone that every day won't be a good day, and that's okay too. Do not beat yourself up because no one is perfect. No one will ever be perfect. Thank you again to Chelsea, and thank you all for listening. There will be some links in the episode description for resources on addiction and recovery. And remember, be kind to yourselves, be kind to each other, and be unapologetically you.